You're tuned to a special edition of the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director, Jason Croft, the producer for the Afternoon Magazine, is Harriet Williamson. Coming up next here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, a special edition of State Week in Review. This half-hour discussion was recorded 1 hour ago. Following the program, we will have a live interview with Cindy Canary, director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, and we're expecting also to invite listener calls. That will be round about 1:35 this afternoon. So stay with us now for a special edition of State Week in Review.
This is a special program of State Week in Review. I'm Rich Bradley.
A little over 2 years ago, the U.S. Attorney and myself stood up here and talked about the conviction of a former governor and hoped that conviction would send a clear signal to elected officials in Illinois that business as usual will no longer be tolerated, that selling your office for personal gain is a practice of the past. It's obvious by this complaint and by today's charges that this current governor did not get that message. I got here 4 years ago. A lot of you were in the audience, asked me the question of whether or not Illinois is the most corrupt state in the United States. And I didn't answer that question, yes or no. And I can't answer that question today. I don't have 49 other states to compare it with. But I can tell you one thing. If it isn't the most corrupt state in the United States, it's certainly one hell of a competitor.
The head of the FBI office in Chicago, Robert Grant, at a news conference with federal prosecutors in Chicago this morning to talk about the arrest early this morning of Governor Rob Blagojevich on corruption charges. As news conference headed by U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, Patrick Fitzgerald. I'm Rich Bradley. Our special panel gathered for this edition of State Week in Review include Chris Mooney, a professor of political studies with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. Bill Wheelhouse, general manager for WUIS, and in our State House Bureau for this special broadcast is Sean Crawford, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS, and Amanda Vinicky, State House Reporter for WUIS. Well, gentlemen, let's go around the horn and get a sampling of your individual reaction to what has transpired today. Charlie Wheeler, let's begin with you.
Okay, I guess the only thing that surprised me was the allegations about trying to sell the appointment to succeed President-elect Obama in the U.S. Senate. With all the attention being paid to the Blagojevich administration, with the federal agencies crawling all over that operation, you would have thought that anyone with an ounce of common sense would have backed off. And yet, according to the U.S. attorney, these schemes took on added steam. And so it's just totally mind-boggling, unless, I don't know, maybe somebody was trying to set themselves up for an insanity defense.
Chris Moody?
Well, I mean, yeah, the timing is unbelievable. Friday, or was it Thursday, the story broke that the federal prosecutors had had in some way been listening in on the governor's private conversation. He takes note of that, says, listen anytime you want. But then we find out this morning in the indictment that on Saturday morning, he is talking in blatant terms about some of these, the quid pro quo sort of discussions. So, this guy seems to be completely delusional.
And downtown, let's bring in Sean Crawford.
Well, I would have to agree. I think the most amazing thing, and we have seen a lot of amazing things in state government when it comes to corruption and almost the arrogance at times of politicians. If what is charged and what is alleged in these reports from the U.S. Department of Justice are correct, it really does, I think, make everything else pale in comparison. Because here is a person who everybody in the state knows is under very close scrutiny. I mean, his phones have been tapped. That's in the papers. Everybody knows this. They've been talking about it for months, and yet this continues on. And as Charlie mentioned, even accelerates here in the last few weeks at a time when the nation is looking at Barack Obama and all of the positive attention that he is getting. To have this going on, I think it's just mind-boggling.
Of course, Bill Wheelhouse, now the general manager of WUIS, but as a State House Bureau Chief back at the time Rod Blagojevich was first elected governor. Bill, your thoughts, comments.
Well, what I find most interesting, I think, is that what I Can you hear me okay on that?
No, I think you've got a dead microphone there. You want to try this one?
What I find probably most interesting during that time is in these recent weeks is that this continued, and this acceleration of activity over the past 6 to 8 weeks. I found it very interesting that the Chicago Tribune held a story, at least in part held some things because the feds were onto something and did not want that story to go that aired a few days ago, or it was about the wiretapping and things of that nature. So I found that to be very interesting. And the fact that he was upset that he was that wasn't going to get anything out of a Obama appointment, and that led to him to this new attitude, and that the speculation people had had and thought was silly all along that he might appoint himself to a Senate seat was actually being thrown around out there.
And Amanda, as a young reporter covering state government in the state capitol, this has got to be a biggie for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gosh, as soon as I heard the news this morning, started getting phone calls from friends, from family, I think everybody has been hearing about what this investigation for so long. And it's always been a what if. You know, the governor denies wrongdoing. The governor has not been charged. You know, you've got to add that caveat to every story, and no longer. And I think what's really, I mean, obviously striking in terms of all of these allegations, everything from the Tribune and trying to fire people to a Senate appointment, I mean, all of it. But I think also when you read it, some of the, I mean, the language, the profanity, he's stuck, Blagojevich saying that he feels stuck being the governor of Illinois. I mean, just some of it that it is so outrageous, I mean, on its surface, part of this, I mean, we're Illinois. There's corruption. There's this long history of this pay-to-play schemes, and obviously this, and a lot of that, most people say, when I've been speaking with legislators all morning, getting reaction, they say, you know, that he was trying to get pay-to-play contributions, exchange of cash, isn't surprising. That's kind of typical of him. What I think, it's the swearing, it's the crassness as well. It's kind of this really, really ugly undertone that he is on tape as having said.
And especially because that's so not reflective of his public persona.
Exactly.
He's constantly the reformer. He's all and the fact
smiley,
that
smiley, good hair, friendly.
It's that guy's almost psychopathic in the kind of in the ways that he can come out and say the sort of things as he said. It was in widely quoted. It was on CNN this morning. You know, tape me anytime you want. I'm only working for the hardworking people of Illinois. And at the same time, just turn around behind closed doors and say the exact opposite. It is. It's a mind-boggling. You know, the cognitive dissonance in this guy would make person's head spin, I think.
And it does kind of, I guess, make me wonder in the sense, I don't know, you do have to wonder about the staff, all of the people that are working with him, the individuals that were close with him. Yes, I mean, he's the governor, and he is the one that I think, you know, voters chose, and so he's first and foremost here. But all of the people that work for him and see this other side of him and have seen it and have gone along with it, and you kind of have to wonder what on earth is going on with them as well, what job would be worth it, what, especially a government job. I mean, they're making more money than us, of course, but, you know, I mean, what would possibly make you do that and go along with it and be involved in these schemes?
Well, and one of his underlings was also indicted today.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
He has had a lot of turnover in his office, though.
Yeah.
Maybe now we know why. You know, and the other thing I think in the long term, if you look at
legal counsels were among those.
That's true. They may have said, look, I can't stand for this, and they're getting out. And the ones that did are probably thankful that they did now. But I'll tell you what. The 76 pages that they have in indictments right now is only for, it seems to be, from what I can read on it, only for a period of about 6 weeks. They got the permission to wiretap on something like October 22nd, and they have information was quoted in these indictments up until December 6th. which, you know, that has nothing to do with all of the issues that have been going back. You know, the endemic hiring fraud that the federal prosecutors were talking about a couple of years ago, the beginning of this administration, when the violation of preferences for veterans and other rules and regulations in terms of hiring in the civil service were, you know, presumably from reports in the press, violated sort of willy-nilly. Each one of those being account, each one of those being fraud, we can start talking about RICO in a real way and taking all the campaign cash and freezing it. This guy could do, you know, uncounted years in prison. And he's got nobody to plead up to. He is it.
Well, I think one other interesting thing, most indictments that take place from the feds are handled usually with a more polite protocol. I think they know mm-hmm. it about a week in advance. Sometimes they're going to be indicted. This time the phone rings. He's asleep. He wakes up. He gets a call telling him he's got people waiting outside and that they're trying to do this quietly, not to wake his children.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to figure out whether it's a practical joke or not at first. And so it was
I wonder if they had some people at the back door.
They apparently did from
what was said there, that they had agents outside the door. So they were in place by the time he got the phone call. And I think that, you know, to look at this on a human element a little bit more, to a human level, I think you see, you know, the fact that there are little kids involved here. I mean, it's sad. I think, you know, it's sad for the taxpayers of this state. It's sad for the public to witness this. It's also sad for, you know, for those kids. And I think everybody's heart would go out to them in that respect. But again, it is just mind-blowing. As Chris was mentioning, most of this that is talked about today occurred really in the last couple of months, you know, month or so before the election, the presidential election, and really leading up to this point right
now.
Even
in the past couple of days, yeah.
And I think what's amazing about it is just that, because there is so much other material that you know they have been investigating, and whether or not it will ever lead to other charges, we don't know. But I think at the same time, it's clear that that this activity did not slow down at any point.
Well, and that was why you see, I think, this coming down now. And in fact, during the press conference, that is what Peter Fitzgerald said in terms of Patrick, pardon me, said in the sense that he wanted to get out before an editor at the Chicago Tribune was fired or laid off.
Before the Senate seat was filled.
I mean, he wanted to get out there and do this. And so I think that's why you see all of this coming out now, he says.
I thought that was unusual, too, in that usually the feds have the case wrapped up, ironclad, ready to go. And he was pretty clear about, we need to talk to other people. This is an ongoing investigation. If you were contacted in any way that made you feel uncomfortable, give us a call.
And Charlie, I bet their phone's ringing off the hook right now.
Charlie, do you think maybe the possibility that he is concerned that he would be kicked out of his position as well, do you think that's possible?
No. There's nobody on earth who has a safer job than Patrick Fitzgerald, in my judgment.
And not only just because he's doing a good job.
Maybe Vladimir Putin. But
and not just because he's doing a good job, but because he is doing a good job, public perception is doing as finding this corruption. And anybody that would even make any moves or even discuss removing him would be tainted with that brush.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that should always be noted in these times is, you still have to say U.S. Senator Peter Fitzgerald, one term, significant accomplishment, a lasting legacy. It was appointing the prosecutor Fitzgerald. And we may not have seen any of this happen with the previous governor or this current administration had it not been for that appointment.
Although you have to wonder, with the way this administration has comported itself, almost any U.S. attorney would have been forced to take notice of it and to take action,
or just
be totally derelict in their duty. I mean, this stuff wasn't all that subtle. It's been pretty blatant.
And I assume that right at this point, anybody that's had not only been approached, but anybody that's had any dealings with the governor, any of these dozens and dozens of people that donated $25,000 to his campaign to sort of price it, hundreds, wasn't it? Something like 350 donations.
There were somewhere in the hundreds.
Yeah, of you know the sort of price of admission.
Like the price of admission though was $25,000.
Right.
It appeared.
And all those people are probably rapidly dialing the phone to get to the federal prosecutor to turn state's evidence as soon as they can. because, you know, the train is well out of the station now, and these last few stragglers are trying to grab a hold of it before they get completely left behind, and they're indicted as well.
Well, almost every politician now in the legislature, state constitutional officers, is calling for Rod Blagojevich to step aside, to resign as governor. If he refuses, what recourse does anybody have if the governor decides to spite the federal government, to spite all the federal indictments that obviously are coming, to spite the allegations in that 76-page affidavit? What recourse is there for any action he may take while still governor? And I'm talking about the appointment to fill the U.S. Senate seat. I'm talking about some legislation sitting on his desk to sign.
Well, one thing on the U.S. Senate seat, of course, the U.S. Senate, I believe, could refuse to seat whoever he puts in if they decided to take that. Now, they may not. I mean, he may pick somebody who's a very qualified candidate. I'm not convinced, to be honest with you, that Rod Blagojevich is going to be in office that much longer. I think that if he decides not to step aside, I do believe we are going to see impeachment proceedings and very, very quickly, maybe even before Christmas.
Yeah, that'll be tricky. It depends on what the Senate President wants to do.
It will be, but I would not doubt the House coming back to take that up. I really would not.
Yes.
I think everybody's in agreement, and if the Senate President, that is Emil Jones still, we should point that out, he is not out of his position until January. You know, if he wants to play a game with it, and that's fine, and block it, that's fine. But I do think we may see the House come back and actually start an
impeachment. But the House can't come back without the
without the
Senate's approval at this point. They have to call a special session, and the two leaders have to call it. And
or the governor.
Yeah, the governor may decide.
I doubt that will happen.
Take my job, please.
Well, do you recall on President Clinton's impeachment day when the vote on impeachment was occurring, he bombed another country.
That's right.
What will Blagojevich do?
I think he's busy turning to the right, turning to the left, putting his hand in the ink pad this morning. Yeah.
You know, I do think it's interesting. I spoke with State Senator Christine Rodogno, who will be taking over, not yet, but in January, as the minority leader in the Senate. And she said that the legislative chiefs of staff got calls this morning from the governor's office reminding them that the governor is still in charge, and she says that the chiefs of staff were told that the governor's office was going to be contacting every department and informing them as well that he's still in charge.
Well, then that's good, and we can't get too far ahead of ourselves here. He is still the governor. He's still innocent until proven guilty. You know, it's some pretty damning evidence when you have, in your own words, you know, these sort of things. But you know, we hope that he will be responsible and that he will carry on and do at least, you know, sort of minimal damage before he is ousted and Pat Quinn becomes our new governor.
And I should point out, too, the governor's press office, I just received a statement from the governor's press office out of Chicago. It says, and I'll just read it in its entirety here, "Today's allegations do nothing to impact the services, duties, or function of the state. Families will continue to receive health care, seniors and persons with disabilities, the support and services they need. The hundreds of thousands of unemployed Illinoisans will still receive assistance. Our state will continue to ensure health, safety, and economic stability for the citizens of Illinois." There is nothing in there regarding any admission or denying of any activities that are outlined by the U.S. Department of Justice. It's a pretty blanket statement. But again, as we pointed out, he is still the governor, and for now, at least, you know, and I'm not convinced it will be all that much longer, but I think he is, you know, he is still the governor, and what he says does go in a lot of parts of state government.
You're listening to a special edition of State Week in Review. I'm Rich Bradley. Our panel members include Chris Mooney, Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, Sean Crawford, and Amanda Vinicky. Well, how would you like to be the governor's attorney and try and defend him against direct quotes from wiretaps?
Well, I think the attorney's job now is not necessarily to defend, but to negotiate, to try to figure out, okay, what do you have? What can this guy plead to? What does he have to do to minimize the damage? That is, to reduce the number of years that he's going to have to go to prison, reduce the fine, that, you know, they could destitute his family. They could put him in prison you know, depending on what other charges, I mean, you know, a person only lives so long. You know, the guy's 50. I mean, they could easily rack up charges into the hundreds of years if all of the various allegations are found to be true and they do a sequential sort of a sentencing thing. So now it's a negotiation issue, I think.
And Chris, do you think that resignation could be part of that negotiation?
Yes.
I definitely think so. Yeah, if I were the U.S. attorney, that would be the first thing I would say. Before we're even going to talk, you are out of the governorship. You've done all the damage to the people of the state of Illinois that you're going to. I want you out yesterday.
There's a similar situation that happened in Tennessee about, I don't know, about 10 or 15 years ago, and I can't remember the governor's name, but a lame duck governor on his way out was apparently selling pardons right and left, and pretty much like Blagojevich was doing in a fairly, you know, overt fashion. He was selling pardons, but he was selling a Senate seat, but a similar thing. The legislature got together and impeached him and convicted him in short order and got him out of there sort of 3 days before his term was over, and then he served a good deal of time in the federal penitentiary. So that was a situation where they tried to get him to resign and refused to do it, and then he had an even tougher term in the prison because of it.
You know, something else that we have here is Patty Blagojevich, and there has been a lot of speculation for years that her real estate business was being looked into because there are some pretty striking similarities. And she's even noted in this indictment, it's not just that Blagojevich was trying to get appointments for himself, be it, you know, on Obama's cabinet or an ambassadorship or with a union job, but also placing his wife on corporate boards. And it, when you look at these young kids, I would think that that would be a major incentive for cooperation to say, you know, if you don't cooperate here, your wife can be going behind bars potentially too. I mean, who knows? There have been no accusations made against her. She has not been arrested, nothing to that effect. But it's clear that that has been looked into and, you know, having two kids without any parent.
Well, I'll throw out my line that I've been saving for a long time here. If Rod Blagojevich had as much class as Elliot Spitzer, he would resign right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And this will sound strange coming from me, but in a way, I look at Rod Blagojevich as being a real tragic figure. Mm-hmm. In that when he was elected, he came into sort of an unprecedented situation for governors in Illinois. He came in at a time when his party controlled both chambers. He had the opportunity to put forward an agenda. He had an opportunity to be a reformer, the kind of person that people thought they were voting for.
And that he told everybody that he was.
Told, yes. And with majorities, solid Democratic majorities in the House and in the Senate for the first time in a decade, he could have been very responsible. He could have dug us out of our economic hole. He could have done a lot of things to make Illinois great. And maybe had he done all those things, he might actually have been mentioned at a national level.
Sure he would have.
And he chose to throw it all away for venality, vindictiveness.
Greed.
And just being plain incompetent and being disinterested and disengaged from the job.
And handicappers should pay attention to Charlie Wheeler. For the better part of a year, he has said this indictment would come before Christmas.
But in all fairness,
but he didn't say which Christmas.
Yeah. No, and I was going to say, in all fairness, I was predicting that he'd be indicted for other things than what he was finally indicted for.
And I think that's the thing that's so shocking to everyone I talked to this morning is that we expected this to happen for other reasons and for all sorts of other things that have been sort of well documented in the press over the years. And in the normal course of events, such as happened in the George Ryan case, it takes years. It took when George Ryan was finally convicted in 2007. It was for activities that occurred almost a decade before that, when he was in the Secretary of State's office. In this case, we're talking about indictment for activities that occurred as little as four days ago, right? This is Tuesday. We're talking about stuff that happened on Saturday, and the indictment has already been. I can't believe they could type that fast. It was 76 pages, for crying out loud.
Well, the way it was done was certainly out of character for Fitzgerald as the U.S. attorney. He has not been known to have this much flair or bombacity, you know, and drama in doing something like this. He's been pretty low-key, mm-hmm. straightforward. But to send the FBI in at 6 o'clock in the morning, I wonder what they did with the state Illinois State Police Security Detail. They had to be tipped off.
Well, you know, I think, too, you're right, Rich. I think this seems a bit out of character, but how do you arrest a sitting governor? How do you really do it? I mean, in all honesty, and
not
probably
a lot of
they did it. They probably did it in the most, even though it seems like it's, you know, call them up, hey, we're here to get you, you put your clothes on, we're going downtown. But at the same time, you know, there were no media, no cameras there to capture this. They did it to some extent, I think, in a low-key way.
They let him change.
For a way to get a sitting governor to basically be arrested. And I think that, you know, how else do you do it, I guess?
It was the lowest key way you could think of. I mean, they could have come into the office, they could have come in,
sure.
you know, in terms of the news cycle,
conference.
It was
yeah,
a bad...
Who knows?
They could have done, last night when he was doing a news conference at the strike location at that factory up there, when CNN was there. That would have been quite flareful.
Well, and that is the thing. I mean, there's all of this going on right now. Workers laid off, state parks closing. I mean, there's so much going on in the state outside of this, and that's part of it, where when you talk about impeachment, the governor is innocent until proven guilty. And yet... What you hear from legislators, and I think makes sense, is that when you're so distracted from the business of governing, that alone is cause for impeachment.
You know, everybody is saying this is a dark day for state government, but sadly, and I really hate to say this, I think from a lot of people I've talked to, that they don't view it that way. They view this as a positive development in a dysfunctional state government that has, and a governor that has, I think, been arrogant at times about some of his decision making, and wrong-headed, I think, in many cases as well. I think there are people out there who think this might be the best thing that's happened to state government in a long time.
Well, before we wrap up, any final comments from anybody? Because there's going to be a lot of news generated as a result of this arrest early this morning.
I guess my comment would be the sooner that the legislature moves to impeach the governor, the better for the state of Illinois. Granted, he's innocent until proven guilty, but as was said already, he's going to have a full-time job trying to defend himself, and Illinois' leadership requires total 100% attention to get us going again.
But Charlie, in Illinois, the House moving to impeach him doesn't remove him from office. It would take a conviction by the state Senate to do that.
Well, yes. And my thought was that the legislature jointly worked together to remove him from office.
If it comes before the state Senate, I would, if I'm not a betting man, not a handicapper like Charlie Wheeler, but I honestly would say that those votes would definitely be there, and especially maybe even before today's indictment, to be honest, or today's.
Well, and the question would be whether the president would call the vote. Yeah, it would allow it to
happen. Yeah, that's really the only question. And if he doesn't do it, of course, a new president is coming in, I think, would have to.
Well, and this is an opportunity for Emil Jones, too, to
distance himself from Blagojevich.
Go out as a statesman.
And everybody's going to be running as fast as they can from Blagojevich right now and trying to make themselves sort of into the anti-Blagojevich. And that, in a sense, might be a way that government starts working better because under Blagojevich, mm-hmm. it certainly was dysfunctional.
Well, and you know, I mean, despite their close relationship, President Jones, his son is now going to be taking over that Senate seat come January. And I do think that would be one reason why you would see President Jones letting this go forward, because why would he want his son, who he, you know, basically got in the seat to start off his career as a senator? There is that connection. So I do think, and furthermore, what good is Blagojevich to him now?
And by way of wrapping up, let me say that for the governor, Rod Blagojevich, his arrest by the FBI at 6 o'clock this morning was a perfect present for his birthday. His 52nd birthday is tomorrow.
The whole thing is just ironic and sad, isn't it?
It is. It is. Thanks to our panel members, Chris Mooney, Charlie Wheeler, Bill Wheelhouse, Sean Crawford, and Amanda Vinicky in this special edition of State Week in Review. For WUIS News and all of the panel here, I'm Rich Bradley.
WI Law programs are made possible in part by Bevere Cafe 2, offering gourmet sandwiches, salads, and specialty coffees with seating inside or outside in the lower courtyard of the Institute for Genomic Biology next to Morrow Plotz on the U of I campus.
This is a special edition of the afternoon magazine. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. We just wrapped up a special edition of State Week in Review. Joining me in the studio this afternoon, AM 580 News Director Tom Rogers. And coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk with Cindy Canary, Director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform. Also this afternoon, listeners, we invite you to join us this afternoon with your thoughts on this very dark day, quite frankly, for the state of Illinois. The numbers, if you'd like to join us, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. We will talk first a little bit with Cindy Canary and get her thoughts on what has transpired today, and then we'll get to those phone calls. Let me tell you a little bit about Cindy Canary. She is the executive director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform. The Campaign for Political Reform is a nonpartisan organization. Its mission is to address the impact of money on Illinois politics and government, as well as issues related to ethics, voter participation, and government accountability. Cindy Canary, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste.
So, we've got to ask you first out, what are your thoughts on what's happened today?
You know, this is very sad. This is a tragedy for Illinois. We have been down this road before, and sadly, Governor Blagojevich seems to have only taken us further down this road. And I personally have found reading this criminal complaint today to be one of the most stunning and appalling public corruption documents I have ever seen.
You mentioned that the governor's led us down this road, and we've been down this road before. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to say I'm not sure if Illinois has ever had to deal with a political crisis like this, not only in the uncovering of corruption,
right,
but its immediate impact on the entire state of state government.
You're absolutely right on that. I mean, I think that we're in completely uncharted territory in terms of what we do with a sitting governor who's under indictment, what we do in terms of our appointment to the U.S. Senate. There are a lot of questions to be answered. This is a disaster.
I'm reading through the 76-page affidavit, and a lot of the things, a lot of the themes, and a lot of the players we had heard before. There's a section on concerning Ali Atta, who was a fundraiser,
right,
for the governor. There are sections on Stuart Levine and Tony Rezko, two names that even in this entire proceeding today, what's gone on today, this is the first time I've even seen those two names.
Mm-hmm.
And these were supposed to be the linchpins of any corruption investigation on Governor Blagojevich. And then about a third of the way into the affidavit, you finally get into what has just caused the biggest seismic waves, the allegations involving the Senate pick and the threats against Tribune Company.
Mm-hmm.
How, as a prosecutor, how, as a political reformer organization, how can you keep track of this all and try to bring up something that would become a trial eventually?
Well, that's a very good question. I have every confidence in the U.S. Attorney's Office. They have, as we know, they've got about a 98% batting average. I think that they came in today with this criminal complaint because they felt that they absolutely had to before more damage was done. And there is probably any number of things that aren't even mentioned in this morning's complaint that are indictable offenses against the governor. But those two things, the attempt to auction off the U.S. Senate seat and the attempt to basically silence the Chicago Tribune, which is appalling, were things that they absolutely had to move on immediately. This is, when I said we had been down this road before, I was referring obviously to George Ryan.
Yeah.
But, that was a little bit more like, being driving down a suburban street and we're now on a superhighway. This is corruption like we have never seen it before.
Yeah. Your organization, Cindy, the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, was a key advocate for making it more difficult to pay to play,
right,
in Illinois. House Bill 824 goes into effect very shortly. This was a bill vetoed by the governor,
yeah,
then overridden by the legislature. Do you expect there will now be an atmosphere for more comprehensive legislation to build on this particular law?
I actually do, Celeste. I think that, right now we are, kind of sorting out all the ashes and the seismic waves around us. But I think that when we get out a couple of days, I think we're going to think more about the opportunities. And I think that the legislature and the other constitutional officers in Springfield very much want to disassociate themselves from, the political toxin that has been Rod Blagojevich. It was 3 years in the making to get the pay-to-play bill, and there are a lot of other bills that talk about how we do politics, how we do government in our state, that address issues of honesty and transparency and accountability. And I don't think that the public should tolerate allowing those bills to sit on the back burner.
Yeah. Now, the process of selecting successors to U.S. senators leaving office, here's a loud clarion call for making that process more transparent. Any thoughts there?
Well, absolutely. We've got a very, very unique situation here with a governor under indictment, and that has to be set aside and dealt with separately. It is just untenable that Rod Blagojevich gets a voice in appointing our next U.S. senator, although constitutionally, obviously, it is still his job. But, when we think forward about other U.S. Senate appointments that may come to play, why don't we have a commission that considers nominations and vets them and puts forward their qualifications and gives the governor the right to do it? There are any number of different ways to do things. And Illinois, sadly, we are, a highly unregulated state. We have had tons of problems with corruption. But the upside of that, if, we try to be positive here, is, the rest of the country is a laboratory for doing it differently. And we can go and borrow better ideas. And I think that should be our job. We should think about how we want to reinvent Illinois government so that it serves the people of this state. What do we envision good government looks like? Can we even remember what a good state government should be like? That's the challenge that's really before us in the next couple of years.
You mentioned that the governor still has the constitutional right to pick a senator. Well, with these reforms that we're talking about, is this something that's going to necessitate a constitutional convention, which voters turned down this year?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, most of these reforms can be enacted by the state legislature. Mm-hmm. As you know, it's very, very hard to get the legislature to enact rules that apply to themselves. They'd rather legislate on, how we run our schools or our farms than anything having to do with how they conduct campaigns and run their offices. But we're at such a crisis point right now. I really do believe that elected officials across this state are going to be scurrying to differentiate themselves from Rod Blagojevich. And I think we may see an embracing of a reform agenda that wasn't greeted as warmly only a couple months ago.
Cindy Canary is the executive director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform. She's our guest this afternoon on this special edition of the Afternoon Magazine. Tom Rogers and I now invite listeners to join us with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's go and take a call now from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, how much of this pretrial publicity is going to compromise the prosecution? And I'll take your thoughts off the air.
Okay.
Well, I would imagine certainly that the defense, whomever Blagojevich's defense team, will make a case out of that. There are ways to handle that. You can move cases to different venues. But I think that the sense of the U.S. Attorney's Office was when they weighed the different factors out, particularly with, this little eBay auction of the Senate seat that the governor was running, there was a feeling that they had to move, and they had to move now.
Let's take another call now. A listener on line two in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Yes, I liked your comment. Everybody is probably going to be scary and to get away from Governor Blagojevich. I think that, well, once the dust settles, however, without strong ethics reform in this state, they'll go back to the same old pay-to-play situation. I remember about 10 or 12 years ago, I was at a conference where former U.S. Senator Paul Simon spoke about the lack of ethics with regard to Illinois government, and he made a famous statement: in Illinois, we get the best public policy money can buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says it all, and it will fade away for a while, but I think the foxes will come out again once they figure the dust has settled.
You know, I think you're right.
Reform.
I think you're right, and that's why we got to seize the moment.
I agree with you.
There's a second year, and we got to move in. And, you know, I also think, and I think Paul, you know, would agree that it's up to us, citizens, voters, to say, you know, enough of this, no more. There's nothing in the water that makes Illinois more corrupt than other places. So we need to get, as you said, some very strict reform legislation in place and you know, be really vigilant as voters and citizens of this state.
But the major hurdle to getting strict ethics reform, as you probably know, is the Illinois General Assembly.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm very cynical about whether this will be an avenue for reform in terms of ethical behavior of our public officials. But I hope you're right.
Thank you for your call.
I hope I'm right, too.
And let's take another call now. A listener from Champaign County waiting for us on line three. Hello.
Hi. I guess I'm a little surprised how this is hitting me so hard. I think it's the total venality of this auctioning off the Senate seat that's particularly, I mean, if he'd just been, you know, shaking down hospitals or movie producers or something. But I have the same cynicism, and I think it, even what's may now in relief be called the best governorship, which is under Edgar, had this management services scandal. And curiously enough, Cellini, who was in the upper echelons of Edgar's, is indicted in collusion with Resco. So I'm not a partisan in any sense, but it's you know, the rot is so pervasive. I mean, if you can have Resco collaborating with Blagojevich and the chair of the Republican Party in Sangamon County, who's got this, I don't know if they had the term unindicted co-conspirator or person of interest, but he certainly was in that era, too. So I guess I'm guardedly hopeful, and I'm glad you're doing the fight. So I'll just hang up and listen to the reaction. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And you know, I think that the commenter was absolutely right that a lot of what we're seeing is this transcends partisan politics. This is the politics of greed. There are good Republicans, there are good Democrats, and then there are greedy, venal people. And what we are seeing here are people that trade access for money. And it's pure and simple and corrupt if proven to be the case.
Yeah. There's so much here, and that caller gets to that issue. You know, it's like shoes on an octopus. When's the next one coming off?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's been astounding, the number of indictments that we have seen. Again, you know, the possibility that we may see a second, if convicted, a second governor go to jail. You know, it's understandable if people grow numb and they grow cynical. But I hope that, you know, some of the energy that we saw with the presidential election this fall, where people from both parties came out to cheer on their candidate in Illinois, in particular, a lot of energy around the hometown candidate, and a lot of talk about hope and change. If we could sort of bring some of that focus down to the state level where we so badly need it, you know, maybe we can make a difference.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and listeners, if you're tuning in now and joining us for settlement prices today from the Boards of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange in Chicago, we're moving that programming element into the closing market report this afternoon. So those numbers will follow news from NPR at 2:06 Central Time. Cindy Canary, the Executive Director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, our guest this afternoon. We've got some more time here. If you'd like to join us, listeners, Tom Rogers and I are in the studio this afternoon on this special edition of the Afternoon Magazine. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take another call now, a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi there. I know there isn't much positive about today, but I do want to thank the people that were in charge of arresting our governor, that they respected the children, that they wanted this done in privacy where the children didn't see their father being taken away. I think that was commendable, but I do know that this day has been long overdue, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
I think that, you know, your caller is absolutely right. That showed a great deal of sensitivity, and we do have to remember there's a family involved. There are two small children. This is a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the people of the state. It's certainly a tragedy for those little girls. You know, I think the people who have been really, truly the professionals here are the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, all of the people on the federal task force. They have they've moved swiftly, and they have done it with some sensitivity. So I think we owe them some gratitude for that.
Thanks for your call. And one thing that I wanted to ask, you touched upon, you know, how quickly this all happened. And I kind of wonder with the timing of this and the fact that they were doing this, somebody had brought up the possibility that this had happened, or the arrest was made so that it would head off a selection to the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly has this all been put together, and does that mean that the case may not be quite as convincing or intense as the U.S. attorneys wanted it to?
Well, I don't know.
Are the lines on all tied together?
Yeah. It's interesting. What we're looking at today is a criminal complaint, not an indictment.
Right.
So it's almost that, you know, normally it's very formalistic and we have a full indictment before the time this happens. There was a decision made to move with all due speed. I think because of the incredible severity and shockingness of the charges. My guess is that the U.S. attorney, through their talks with Stu Levine and Tony Rezko, that there's a whole host of other things, as you mentioned earlier, that may come into this story. So they may not have their case fully mapped out yet. They may have gone more quickly than they wanted to, and some of that may have been because, you know, the story appeared in the Tribune last Friday.
Right.
But I think that there's certainly plenty here, and if, as they say, they have this on tape, then they have a lot to work with.
Do you think that if the governor were, he's still the governor,
certainly,
were to name a successor to the president-elect, do you think anyone would take it? Or, I mean,
it's right. An actual serious question, to tell
the truth.
I know
it's a serious question. you know, yesterday? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there is so much tarnish at this point. I think that, you know, nobody wants to be seen as, you know, sort of Governor Blagojevich's sort of good political pal, and nobody wants to have questions raised that they may have had these discussions or intimated any kinds of promises. So I think that if someone did take this, you know, hypothetically, if they did take an appointment to the Senate, they would be wearing such a heavy yoke of public mistrust, probably a lot of skepticism from their congressional colleagues, that we would be putting someone into the U.S. Senate who, you know, is really fairly well wounded
and impotent before they even got going.
Let's take another call now. A listener in Champaign Line 2. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. The reason I'm calling is because obviously this involves currently the governor and his chief of staff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just guess I have a hard time thinking that they're the only two people within that administration who have culpability. And mm-hmm. I don't know if there are, you know, any real historical precedents for this. I mean, because the Ryan case is a little bit more unique. And I guess I'm wondering how you anticipate this might reverberate through some of the other senior staff members in the governor's administration, you know, from the general counsel to, right. you know, any of the deputy governors that he's worked from the past or even currently work there. I'm just kind of curious how that might play out.
Right. And, you know, certainly we don't want to, speculate or
right.
we don't want to name names, but... But I think that, you know, this whole case that we've seen go on with the Better Government Association trying to get the subpoenas to the governor's office made public, it is thought that these subpoenas have gone to many, many top-level Blagojevich staff members.
Mm-hmm.
So that the circle could actually be much wider. And as we read this criminal complaint, there are kind of hints and suggestions which may be one person or the other.
Right.
You know, I think that what the U.S. attorney did today was they zoomed in to the center, that, you know, the center of the conspiracy.
Right.
They will, my best guess is they will be talking to people from throughout the administration and others to either to get them to testify or perhaps to bring some additional charges.
Yeah, I could see that too. Wow, that's really it should be an interesting time.
I bet it's a very, very scary time to be on the 16th floor of the Thompson Center.
Well, the reason I called, I actually used to work there, so I was kind of wondering about that. So,
yeah,
it was a couple years ago.
Not a happy day.
How is this going to roll down? I don't know. So anyway, well, look, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Interesting stuff.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Thinking about the state of Illinois and its reputation in the United States now. We have a president-elect from the state of Illinois. Do you see that this could further harm not only our reputation, but what happens to the state of Illinois? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And it's. I think that's a serious and important question. And it's a question that I hope people think about very seriously, that there are repercussions to all of this that extend far beyond whatever happens to Rob Blagojevich and John Harris. You know, we in effect, are paying a corruption tax, whether it be through our inability to get business to locate here, to get legislation through, to do a capital plan, just our real gridlock. And I think that, you know, we have to think about our state and our state's history. You know, you think about Dan Walker on the one hand, Paul Simon on the other, you know, kind of a devil on one shoulder, an angel on the other. You know, just recently the President of the United States was elected from the state of Illinois. We're all, you know, whatever our political persuasion, quite proud of that, very hopeful. And, you know, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, our governor has been arrested. So I think that we really need to think about, as we go forward, what is the best tradition of Illinois politics? Because it's in there. It's not just a history of corruption. It's also a history of some very fine leaders. And that's the history that we need to reclaim.
Mm. Cindy Canary, Executive Director of the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, thank you very much for being
with
us this afternoon.
Thanks, Cindy.
Bye-bye.